Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone. I'll be honest, Locker. A Monday night, I haven't heard that many people be so excited about a big dumper in a long, long time. That is the nickname of the Home Run Derby champ, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
It's a good nickname.
They were having far too much fun
with Big Dumper.
With Cal Raleigh's nickname.
A lot of times.
Of Big Dumper.
The surprising thing for me is if there's a slightly offside nickname, it usually stays in the clubhouse, right? We get the sort of the PG version. So that one, for whatever, it must be his personality, because that one has leaked its way into the regular sort of fan base and everything.
Yeah, it was all over primetime television last night.
The old Big Dumper.
As referenced by this clip to start the starting lineup.
The Big Dumper goes 108. He's got one swing to go.
Get it, Cal!
Cal Raleigh putting the Maximus in Gluteus Maximus.
Stop
15
it.
Homers. Five of the last seven. What a round!
Cal Raleigh's the Home Run Derby champion, as predicted by me yesterday on the Green Zone. How did your guy do, Locker? You had Jazz Chisholm Jr.
Jazz struggled.
Struggled? He hit three home runs.
By the way, that is
tough to do.
What did I say
when
yesterday?
You have 40 cuts at it to only hit three.
What did I say? Yesterday I said, if you have any money, throw it on old Jazz. And that is just more proof. Never listen to me about betting. If I say something, do the complete opposite.
Meanwhile, Raleigh, of course, leads the league in majors, 38 home runs. He was hitting from both sides of the plate. It was a family affair. It was cool. His dad was throwing the ball, Todd. He's a former university coach.
What was his brother's name? His little brother?
I forget his 15-year-old brother's name. But he was
Little Dumper
behind the plate. And Cal was talking about he's turning 16 soon. Maybe I'll buy him a car.
Well, he won $1 million.
I'm like, maybe. What's maybe about it?
No.
Wouldn't you buy your brother a car when he turns 16 if you're a multimillionaire?
If I liked him.
Never considered that. I like my brothers.
His brother, I thought, made it, because you could hear him. He was yelling at his dad to get the ball in a little tighter, a little lower. What are you doing? And he was giving his brother Cal some encouragement. I thought it was awesome.
One of my favorite moments is when Todd, the dad, went a little high and inside and beamed Cal during the whole
clipped his elbow. All right, we'll stick with the majors. Tonight is the Midsummer Classic, ladies and gentlemen.
Pitch, and Kirk hits it high and deep to center. It is gone! Guerrero high and deep to left field, and there it is.
Some highlights from a couple of Jays that will be taking part, Kirk and Vladdy. It's in Atlanta, 6 o'clock start. Vladdy will play first, bat fifth. Kirk from the Jays is on the reserve team, so I'm not exactly sure when we'll see him. But should be a lot of fun. We got Skeens. He's the 2024 Rookie of the Year. He is starting for the National side of the ballpark.
And you got Scooble on the American League side for the starters for the All-Star game. Meanwhile, the Riders back to work at Mosaic Stadium, shaking off that loss to the Stampeders, and they did it with the pads on today.
Yeah, we love it, especially after that. Get some frustration out, and that's what we love. We love to see it and go on film and have a good time watching film because of it.
So, Of course, teams have limited padded practices. Now, a couple of years ago, they got rid of padded practices during the regular season. They were able to bring them back with the guardian caps on. So the coaches have to be strategic. When do we put the pads on during the regular season? Corey Mace said they got out-physicaled against the Stampeders. So today was the day to put the pads on, get some physical action going, getting ready for the BC Lions. There are some injury notes. Roland Milligan Jr., Marcus Sales, Tavon Campbell did not participate with the first-team defense. Corey Mace, though, did say he believes all three should be able to suit up for Saturday's game in BC. Sam Emelis, meanwhile, looks like he still might be a week or two away, limited again. We'll see what it looks like tomorrow, of course, as the Riders get to work. The BC Lions were off again today after their big win on Sunday against the Elks, so no injury report from the BC Lions side.
Milligan, Sales, and Campbell?
Yeah, that's not good. That's not great. That's not great.
All right.
That makes Nathan Rourke probably paying a lot more attention to what's going on with the secondary of the Riders.
All right. From three down to four down, rookie camps in the NFL started today.
With the 25th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the New York Giants select Jackson Dart, quarterback, Mississippi.
So the Giants are one of six teams that had the rookie camps reporting today. You've got the Giants trading up to get Jackson in the draft, and then they bring him along to help out Russell Wilson.
Or take Russell Wilson's job midway through the season. We'll see how it goes for the New York Giants.
Yeah, so the other teams, my Bills, the Ravens, 49ers, Dolphins, and Seahawks. Most of the training camps begin next Monday or Tuesday. So a handful of teams in the NFL getting an early start.
Meanwhile, in the National Hockey League, a familiar name joins the San Jose Sharks as a coach slash advisor.
Pavelski will wait. Give it to Thornton. He'll shoot.
Jumbo Joe, of course, heading to the Hall of Fame, is now hired by the San Jose Sharks as a player development coach and a hockey operations advisor. He played over 1,700 games in the National Hockey League, of course, split between Boston, San Jose, and a couple of coffees with the Maple Leafs and the Panthers. So Joe Thornton, one of the newest members of that San Jose coaching staff and front office. As you get to
your first ballot hall,
you're getting used to it, right? All the former legends of a team hired to run said team. It's happening all over the National Hockey League.
But the Joe thing makes sense to me because he's rumored to have always been that guy that when the new guy showed up, he would let them stay at the house and, you know, get them integrated. Like, I think he's always sort of played that role as a member of the Sharks. So it's fitting.
And he's around.
He's kicking around
anyways.
But wasn't he skating with the team too? Like occasionally after he retiring? Mm-hmm. Like he'd go out and just hang out with the boys and.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he loves hockey so much. He's just one of those guys who can't leave the
makes
rink.
Makes sense.
Do you
right?
think he'll also advise them on beards? Will he be the beard advisor for the San Jose Sharks as well? Teach Macklin Celebrini how to grow a playoff beard if they ever get there.
His was unruly, though. I don't know if he's an advisor in that department because I think he just lets it grow because he's one of those guys that can shut his eyes and push a beard out in a minute.
He just has to think about it, and he's like a chia pet.
It's like my dad. He used to have to set the alarm in the middle of the night so he didn't grow into the pillow and suffocate himself.
Jumbo back with the Sharks. Officially today. Coming up next, we had a hearty debate in the Green Zone Lounge earlier today. Was the Home Run Derby any good last night? It was split. Some people thought it was great. Others were like, man, it was a little bit too busy. Too much going on. And Pat McAfee sucked on the telecast. So, was it good? Was it not? I believe it's hands down the best all-star event we've seen all year. What say you? 1-877-332-8255. This is the Green Zone on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Now the over may be fairly Jamie Locker with you here in the Green Zone. A little bit of NFL news the last 2 days. The New York Jets are loading up on their young talent with new contracts. They've spent $250 million the last 2 days to lock up defensive back Sauce Gardner today. Yesterday, it was wide receiver Garrett Wilson. $120 for Wilson, $130 for Sauce Gardner, as those two young men were offensive and defensive rookies of the year 2 years ago.
What a great name.
Sauce Gardner?
Sorry. That is a fantastic name.
He's a fantastic football player, too. It's his nickname, of course.
It's not his first. Oh!
He's always gone by Sauce Gardner, but his first name is actually Ahmad Gardner.
Okay.
But he's gone by Sauce.
Sauce is way more fun. Why'd you name your kid Sauce? I really like Sauce.
So there's the New York Jets. That's what they're doing.
I'm a dip guy.
If you're wondering
about my son Dip.
If you're wondering about what they're doing with all of Aaron Rodgers' money that's no longer there, they're paying the young core of that team. Last night it was the All-Star Home Run Derby, Major League Baseball. We had an interesting debate in the Green Zone Lounge earlier, Locker. There are some members of the team who weren't that thrilled with the Home Run Derby.
Scotty, the producer, said there was too much going on, that he didn't like the camera angles, and that he didn't know what to look at. Which I as soon as he said
he's an old man.
But it was he wants it like the old days. One pitch, boom, and then it's watch. Look at the one ball flying out and gone. Bloop. And then next pitch. Oh, it's a first out.
I prefer this.
I much prefer this. Let's move it along.
I like maybe there is a point about the different screens, because you don't get to see the ball all the time go into the stands, that you didn't always get that view, because it was that main view, and then you got the counter on the top, so that kind of draws your eyes a little bit.
You had the actual ball sailing out that shot while they're still throwing, because they have 3 minutes to throw 40 balls and then 2 minutes to throw 27 or whatever it was.
It is
interesting. They can call a timeout, take a break, take a breath.
It is interesting.
Go.
To Scotty's point, my wife said, this is annoying. I don't know what to look at. So she kind of agreed with Scotty, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
You thought it was good. I thought it was a great show.
Yeah.
It's the best show when it comes to All-Star. Now, someone said, what are you talking about? The Four Nations Face-Off was the best All-Star event.
That was Jay's.
I'm not including the Four Nation Face-Off. No. I'm talking, I guess, skills competition-wise.
Yeah.
When you're looking at fastest skater and hardest shot and most accurate shot and slam dunk and three-point and all that stuff. No. Give me the Home Run Derby every day of the week over those ones.
And the sort of the the guys, right?
From the Dominican Republic?
From the Republic, and that sort of camaraderie and all that. That was kind of a cool angle to it. And then Cal and his dad and his little brother, Little Dumper.
Both named Todd. Todd's the dad, Todd's the brother, too, by the way.
Yeah.
So Cal Raleigh, who's leading the league in majors, and he was doing it from both sides of the plate, which I thought was cool. You take a timeout, switch sides.
So is he the first switch hitter to win it? He's not the first switch hitter to take part. Because I remember a couple years ago, there was a guy that was on both sides of the plate that was in it. I don't know if I don't think he won it, though. I think he might be the first, like, true switch hitter to win the Derby. We'll have to look that up.
I did mention it last night, but I forget what that stat was on the switch hitting part of it. But it was... It was interesting, but your guy, Chaz Chisholm, man, did he show up. What a show.
I apologize about that.
The advice of Locker. See, this is the thing. Locker used the advice of a Yankee fan to tell him that the Yankee was going to win. And I'm like,
my future son-in-law is like, look out for Jazz. I'm like, okay, all right, I trust you.
Right away, when someone, what is their bias? That is my first thing. Why are they giving me this advice? What do they have in the game?
O'Neal.
It's like when Bomber fans tell me and Stampeder fans tell me, this is their year. I'm like, okay, I wonder where that's coming from. We don't do that here in Saskatchewan. Damian Locker with you here on the Green Zone on this Tuesday afternoon. Green Zone writer reporter Britton Gray will be coming in to bring you up to date on the green and white. We'll also be talking to the head coach of the BC Lions, Buck Pierce, just past 3 o'clock as the Riders get set for the Lions on Saturday. But right now, let's go racing, shall we? The Sutherland Automotive Speedway, the place to be the next two nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, as NASCAR Canada coming to town. Of course, some racing tonight, and the big race goes tomorrow. Colin Livingston joins us. He is a racing analyst, also working this weekend for the Ryan Vargas Racing Stable. Also, his work with CanTorque. Colin, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Very well. What is the gig this week for Colin Livingston in Saskatoon?
Well, I mean, obviously, this is the highlight of the week, getting to talk to you guys, but I'll be working as the spotter for Ryan Vargas.
So I know that you have a connection with Alex Tagliani. What is that connection, Colin, and why isn't he at the race tomorrow in Saskatoon?
Kind of funny. He's texting me right now as we're talking. So I met Alex about 15 years ago in Edmonton. He was the featured speaker at an event that Northlands put on, who also hosted the former IndyCar race. Just started chatting with him. One thing led to another, and we were signed on as a sponsor. That worked for a couple of years. Alex's last year's in IndyCar. Then we started a NASCAR team in 2014. And shortly after that, he kind of moved me into a crew position where I became his spotter, which is the guy that talks to the driver on the radio. But Alex is only doing the road course races this year. We're sharing the number 80 car with Donald Teage. He's an oval specialist. So I'll be back on Alex's radio here in a week and a half at Calabogie Speedway in just outside Ottawa.
As we talk to Colin Livingston, but let's get set for the NASCAR Canada Series in Saskatoon tomorrow. As you mentioned, working with Ryan Vargas, you talked about being the spotter. For racing aficionados, they kind of know the gig. But go through the race tomorrow and your gig as spotter, watching Ryan go around and the calls you'll be making tomorrow.
So a spotter is kind of a twofold position. It's a legal, it's a required position under NASCAR rules, because when the driver is in the car, you know, they have, all of the drivers now use what's known as a Hans device. It keeps their head connected to their body in the event of front end impacts, which keeps them safe, but it also limits their ability to look around. So in essence, a driver can only see out the front of their windshield. Now, there is a mirror, but, you know, really the whole right side of their car, the inside of their car, they can't see. So what a spotter's second role is to tell the driver what's happening around them. So if, you know, a track like Saskatoon is fantastic. It's one of the best ovals that we race on all across Canada, because there's progressive banking, meaning that the further away from the bottom of the track you go, the banking actually increases. So it really allows for what we call side-by-side racing. You know, somebody could be driving, you know, down at the bottom, which is a little shorter and quicker, but you can run a slightly longer line at the top. I communicate to the driver to let them know where they are in relation to the other cars. So if somebody's trying to pass us or we're trying to pass somebody else, I let him know whereabouts they are so that he doesn't make a move in contact and, you know, somebody gets a lot of damage or gets injured.
It's interesting. I have a spotter in my car when I drive. My wife.
Yeah. Yeah, Deb's always right, though. And the problem is, unlike Alex, you know, Alex actually listens to my input. So,
yeah, well, I don't know how I actually managed to function without a spotter in my car. Like, when I'm driving by myself, I'm terrified.
We're all terrified, Locke.
I've been in the car while you're driving. We all should be terrified.
There'd be a lot of bump. There's bumping and grinding on the ring road and Circle Drive, let alone the speedways in Saskatchewan when you're on the road.
Speaking of spotters, Jamie's another one. Okay, can you give us some history on the NASCAR Canada series? Just sort of a Cole's Notes, Colin?
Yeah, I mean, originally we were known as CASCAR up until about 2011 when NASCAR bought the Canadian Stock Car Auto Racing Series. We compete this year in five provinces, so obviously we were at Wetaskiwin in Alberta last weekend, Saskatchewan this week, then throughout Ontario, Quebec, and 2 weeks ago, the guys were in Nova Scotia at Antigonish. You know, for people who watch racing, this doesn't sound all that elaborate because, you know, NASCAR, IndyCar, Formula One, they're in different countries every 2 weeks. NASCAR goes across the country, but they've got massive budgets and they've got really, really deep employment levels. Our guys, you know, to make the transition from Antigonish really a week and a half ago to be in Edmonton, it's a major undertaking. It's, you know, something like 12, 14 hours from Antigonish back to where most of the jobs are. They have to do a quick service on the car, reload. You know, it's the better part of 3 days, 3.5 days, you know, to get across the country to do these couple of races and then, you know, turn around right back. And again, the transition this time is they're going to have to offload the oval cars, put the road course cars on for us to be in Calabogie in 10 days. So this is a really, really hectic time of year. These guys are working like crazy. I mean, I'm kind of a diva. I get to parachute my way in. I get to, you know, work for a couple hours. I get to parachute out. These guys, you know, these road course cars that have to get loaded here when they get back, you know, kind of this weekend, they've already had them prepped for the last couple of weeks because there wouldn't really be time between these races. So it's very chaotic. These teams work a lot harder than anyone knows.
Colin, how exciting is this Saskatoon stop? I know it's a pretty popular one for those who head out to Sutherland.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's cliche to say when you're coming into a town like, hey, you know, you guys here in Saskatchewan, you're our favorite stop. But, you know, honest to God, this is one of everyone's favorite stops. The track is super racy. You know, where we were last weekend, you know, at Wetaskiwin, the track is only a quarter mile and it's very flat. So there's really only one groove. The only way you can typically get around a car, you got to kind of, what we say, knock on the door, you know, use the chrome horn, kind of bump them a little bit to let you know that you're quicker. If they don't get out of the way, there is etiquette to it and there's kind of a procedure to it. You kind of give them a couple of shots, and if they don't get out of the way, you just kind of plant your bumper on their bumper and keep going until they lose traction. You make the pass and you hope like hell that you clear them before they can react. And that's the way it goes on these short tracks. Now at Saskatoon, because of the banking and because of the way the track's built, you can run side by side, lap after lap. I mean, the last time we won there with Alex, 3-4 years ago, we were racing with Andrew Ranger. We probably went side by side in first and second for 60 laps and just didn't touch each other. There was, you know, it was just
oh, that's his calling. Livingstone joining us. He is on the road to Saskatoon, so breaking up a little bit right now. But Colin, as we get closer and closer to race time, what is race day like from the pit crew, driver, yourself tomorrow before things start to fly?
Yeah, so we get to the track about 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, offload all the gear. It's kind of unique that we park outside of the track. We have to move the cars, the pit equipment, the tents, all the stuff we're going to use. We have to haul that in. Practice will be, I think, 12:45 to about 1:45. We have a couple hour break, but the local series, I think track running in the series will kind of fill in the time while we're working back on the car. Then we qualify around 5 o'clock, and then the race starts just after 7. But we stay pretty busy from the time we get there. There's always something to do on the car, or you know, we have sponsor engagement. We have, you know, friends and family that come by. So there's just not a lot of downtime.
Well, Colin, thanks so much for your time. Enjoy the race and tomorrow.
Thanks, Colin.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
That is Colin Livingston joining us. He will be spotting tomorrow for Ryan Vargas, as he says, does a lot of work through his own company, CanTorque, sponsoring racing. He's around the track. He does analysis out of Edmonton for all of NASCAR and F1 and all that stuff. So,
and him and Tags,
he knows his way around a track.
They're connected too, right? I met Alex a couple of times. I've known Colin for a long time, and Alex is a really nice guy. I think really easy to talk to.
I know there's an event tonight at Sutherland. Of course, that's starting in a couple of hours with some of the local crews, and then of course tomorrow it carries over with the NASCAR Canada Series out of the Sutherland Automotive Speedway.
And this is a fun track to race on too.
Coming up next here on the Green Zone, Mario Alford joined Riders Lore with an electric afternoon at Mosaic Stadium. We'll remember it next on this day in sports history on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Ipswich Farm remembers.
It's up.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal.
Down goes Frazier.
And after 22 years,
on this day in sports history. It was only 2 years ago today. It was July the 15th. We gathered at Mosaic Stadium to watch the Rough Riders lose again to the Calgary Stampeders in a home game. But
bit of a trend.
There's a little Rider history in that game. For only the second time in Rider history, the first Curtis Mayfield, Mario Alford became the second.
Grace kicks it away from the 15. Hangs up there momentarily. Alford takes it cleanly just inside the 45. Turns the corner. Gets it down towards the 30. Mario Alford still going. One way to the right. Touchdown, Riders. Super Mario.
It's all good. Like I said, I'm going to bounce back, and I'm going to put some more points on the board.
Alford backed up inside his 20. Mario Alford looking for space.
Yes, 20 times in CFL history, a kick returner has taken two punt returns in the same game for touchdowns. Mario Alford did it 2 years ago today at Mosaic Stadium. He did a lot of scoring for the Saskatchewan Roughriders 2 years ago today, joining Curtis Mayfield as the only two Riders to have multiple return kicks in the same game.
Is there a three? Is there a three in the record books?
Nobody's ever done it three times in a game. Only two. So it's a 20-way tie for first for two kick returns in the same game in CFL history. Also on this day, of course, what happened in that game was Trevor Harris broke his leg in that one, too, on this day.
And Super Mario stuff, way more fun than that, though.
Yes, it is. Yeah, yeah. It's a lot more fun. And he also missed practice today for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. He was another injury from that game against the Calgary Stampeders, was Mario Alford.
He got banged up a bit.
Yeah, he didn't finish the game. He went to the sideline on the Stampeders side, got dragged down from behind a bit. So another injury to look for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. But Dre McCray, remember Dre McCray?
Yeah.
He flashed in the preseason, and everybody was like, oh, maybe Dre McCray should be the kick returner now for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So if Mario's out, maybe we'll say more Dre McCray for the first time in the regular
season. I've liked Alford this year.
We all have.
He's looked really good.
Burst.